This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, good morning. Welcome to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio with Charlie Dobbin, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland. How are you this morning, Charlie?
Dean, you're not going to believe this. I saw a murder this morning.
You saw a murder this morning?
Yeah.
Okay. Do tell.
Of crows.
Of crows?
Yeah.
Oh.
In my bird bath, all bathing together, four of them. They're really big birds.
Oh, right. That's what it is called. The group of them is called a murder, right?
Yeah,
a murder of crows. Gotcha.
Oh, your face
How
was
many?
Good. Your face
I know.
Was good. What?
How many?
Four.
How many makes a murder?
Three, according to Google. Actually, even
three
two,
or more
potentially.
Makes a murder of crows.
But, yeah. It's really a flock. I guess murder is left over from ancient times because people always felt that crows had bad portents. Like they were just so big and so black.
Yeah, well, I got to tell you, I haven't had any crows on my bird feeder, but I have had so many of the American goldfinch lately.
Yeah.
Wow, like tons of them. My bird feeder is just covered with yellow, which is much to my
Beautiful.
Delight.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and how's the garden doing? How is your garden doing? How's the rain level? How the rain level's been?
The shallow-rooted things like lawns are greening up because we got 10 millimeters this week.
Nice. Good 10 millimeters of rain. That's good.
Yeah, we were looking forward to more, but so I am still having to get out there. Let's remember, for anybody who's working with what I'm working with, you know, lawns and shallow rooted things are fine. Even the deciduous trees and shrubs. Okay. So they drop their leaves early. It's not the end of the world, but our evergreens must be watered before real winter comes. So the watering of the evergreens is going to be a full-time job for some of us this fall, I'm afraid.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't think we think about watering trees, many of us in general. You know, we just kind of feel that it looks after itself somehow, the watering of the trees. I think the plants get more attention because the trees don't change their look a whole lot. So is that possibly why it is?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, they look fine. Why worry about them?
Yeah.
But the word evergreen is not really correct because they're not truly evergreen. They do drop needles every couple of years. Mm-hmm. So it's really, you know, if some of the inside needles are turning yellow and dropping on any of your evergreens, that's no worry. It's the tips. We watch the tips. And of course, once the tips start to go, you're in trouble. Like that, the plant is on its way out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So don't let that happen.
Don't let the tips go. So that is the sign that you watch for. So the tips of your evergreens, you want them to be like that nice bright green?
Well, or blue in the case of the blue spruce, right? Like, yeah, you want them to be perky and firm. I mean, if you see any floppiness to evergreens, of course, that's another indicator that they're very dry. Mm-hmm. I mean, most of Ontario, I think, has had some pretty good rain in the last few weeks. And I think you have, haven't you?
We've had up in the Collingwood area, we have had some nice rains and even a light one the other day. But it just, I got to tell you that my lawn is really green. And I visited a neighbor two doors over the other day. Stan and I were having a chat, and his lawn not so nice. But remember, I told you that during that whole drought time, I would periodically I would put the sprinkler out, and I would run it for about 4 hours in one spot, and then I would do another spot for about 3 or 4 hours in another spot, and just to sort of help keep it alive. And it seems to have made a difference because really our entire lawn is green. We don't have any brown patches at all.
Oh, nice. Well, ours is greening up. We have not had the mower out, and I think we're up to 12 weeks now.
You haven't mowed the lawn in 12 weeks. Wow.
I haven't needed to. It's been crispy and not growing.
Wow.
So now we are getting some tufts of green, you know, waking up, right? The lawns go dormant. Most of the lawn grasses go dormant. So they are starting to extend. So, yes, I think it's going to be mow day today.
Okay.
Just, now that we've got some, it's actually another beautiful blue sky day in Prince Edward County.
You're going to have some kind of a celebration for the lawn mowing day today.
I don't know. It's really loud. I haven't missed the mowers at all.
Yeah, no, not at all. Unless you have any announcements,
Just two, I
can give out the numbers.
Do the numbers.
I'll give the numbers. Okay, so we'd love for you to give us a call with any indoor gardening question, outdoor gardening question, mowing, tree question, whatever you got in your brain. If you live in Toronto, here's the number, 416-360-0740. If you live anywhere outside Toronto but still within the province of Ontario, here's a toll-free number, 1-866-740-4740. Don't be shy if you've never called before. You know, make sure you do that, and I'll give you the garden wings, which I realize I just don't have right beside me, but I'll have them with me. So we'll give you the garden wings, okay? Let Owen know, our operator, if you're a first-time caller, and I will give you those. We want you to call often. We want you to call early. And please, this is an important one, one question per call, okay? So what do you got for us, Charlie?
Well, we're getting back into the season, right? Believe it or not, as we all know, this is Labor Day weekend, and once Labor Day has passed, as Owen pointed out, it's Air Show Day at the Canadian National Exhibition in Toronto, and the long weekend, and then everybody's back to school, back to work, back to more regular routines after a lazy summer of swinging in the hammock and enjoying margaritas wherever we go. This is time to get back into the hort societies as well. So Burlington Hort Society would like to invite everybody to their meeting on Wednesday, September the 10th. They operate pretty early there. They start about 6:30, go till about 9:30. Their speaker is David Stotesbury, and he'll be speaking on what sounds like a pretty interesting topic. It's honey's incredible legacy and the evolution of beekeeping.
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah, so like a real historical and obviously very, very interesting topic that he's speaking on. Now, apparently the Burlington Hort Society has moved venues. They used to be at the Burlington Senior Center. I do not know at this point where they are meeting on Wednesday, September 10th, but if you're interested and you want to attend the meeting, go to Burlington HS. So obviously Burlington Hort Society HS.com for an updated information for where they meet.
And don't go on your own. Yeah, no, take your honey.
And look out for murders.
Wow. Yeah. This show is going in an interesting direction.
I know. I have murder on the brain. All right. So the other thing to put on your calendar is Port Hope Horticultural Society having a meeting Monday, September 15th. Mm-hmm. I am the speaker. Woo-hoo. So 7:30 to 9:30. Come on down and listen to me giving you some tips and tricks and techniques on designing for shade. The Hort Society meets at the Parish Hall, St. John's Church, 33 Pine Street North in Port Hope, 7:30, September 15th.
You know what? It's interesting that you would be speaking about that because I actually do have. We have so two very, very challenging portions of our house. One of them is very small but sits under a north-facing window. And gets almost no sun. Everything is indirect. I have never known what to do with it. The only thing that is successfully grown there is mint, you know. And that is
better than nothing.
Better than nothing. Right now, there's nothing. And I do have a back portion of the house that is so shaded by the neighbor's evergreen trees that it's even hard for grass to grow there. And so so that would be something like that would be very, very helpful for yours truly. So
there you go. Put it on your calendar, September 15th.
Love it. September 15th. Okay, you know, we have time to, let's do one call. We've got Fran on the line from Oakville. Fran, welcome to the Garden Show.
Oh, hi. Good morning. How are you?
Morning. Good. What do you got for Charlie there, Fran?
Oh, I got an amaryllis bulb that's in a, I don't know if it's wax or plastic or whatever, right? And I want, it's growing. There's little leaves coming up now, but I want to know what to do with it. Should I just take the covering off and store it for the winter and then plant it in soil?
The poor little thing. Did somebody give you that as a gift?
Yes.
When? Last Christmas?
Yes. And I just kept it and there are little leaves coming up now.
Just now. But it did a flower, obviously, months ago. And sitting somewhere. Right. It is a bit late, but never say never. If that is wax that's on that bulb, if you can carefully, well, there's usually a little wire, like a paper clip that's coiled into a circle in the bottom that's been punched into the bottom of the bulb. So get that out.
Look at the bottom.
Yeah, well, it sits
of whatever it is, that plastic thing. I just kept it. It's gold. It's pretty. So I just kept it.
Oh, as a pretty thing.
And
okay.
Then I put outside. And now the little leaves are coming up.
Yeah. Oh, I see. So Fran, it is a tropical bulb. It cannot stay outside. It will die. If it was going to really go outside, it should have gone out last May, which it didn't. So for now, if you want to try and keep it going, I would remove any wires from the bottom, carefully peel the wax away. It may or may not work, but remove the wax and then plant that bulb into a pot, not much bigger than the bulb. And you're going to leave the top third of the pointy end of the bulb out of the soil. You're going to bury roughly a half to two thirds in the potting soil, water it once for sure, leave it outside and definitely, consider bringing in, leave it out for now, but then bring it in before we have a hard frost. And good luck with that.
Okay. Thanks very much, Fran. We got to run. We got to run to commercial break, but we'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show on this final Garden Show of August. Of course, Monday, I should say, is the 1st of September, the earliest that Labor Day weekend can possibly be. September is right around the corner. But Charlie, we still have 3 weeks of summer. And of course, September often, and even into October, often offers some really nice warm weather.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. And just not just the warm, but perfect working weather. Like, blue skies, clear, crisp air, low 20s, high teens, just perfect.
So you're a September lover when it comes to working in the garden, it sounds to me like.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the spring, we're always so jazzed up. We're so excited to see stuff come up and so excited to see our new plans are emerge, new seedlings, etc. But fall is the time we can get so much done and so effectively. So not only is the weather with us, but the ground and the conditions are with us. Because even where I am, where we've had so little rain, we're getting some lovely dew now. So, by midnight, there's dew on the grass and on the ground, and it's there for hours. So even something as simple as dew is adding moisture to plants. And of course, the soil is nice and warm from being in a hot, sunny summer. And so plants are just waking right back up. They didn't like 40 degrees, but they're very happy with these 20s.
Okay. Okay. I will have a question about that, time permitting, but I want to give out the numbers again, and then I'll go to our next caller. Please give us a call if you have any questions about gardening, 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. We have Mary on the line from Toronto. Welcome to The Garden Show, Mary.
Thank you, and good morning to you both. Charlie, I called on this more than a month ago. The thing is, about a month ago, I had the whitefly, a few of them, on my hibiscus. I have five plants, and four of them are still in their little pots. They keep blooming and giving me buds and blooming. Long story short, I sprayed them too heavily. I forgot that you could douse them with rubbing alcohol. So about 3 weeks after, when they still didn't look that great, and that's almost 2 weeks ago now, I went over every leaf, top and bottom, and the buds with rubbing alcohol, with Q-tips and whatever. But the last at least 10 days, both the top of the leaf and the bottom are shiny and sticky, and I've never had that. And I don't see anything on it.
Okay.
And
so
they're
wait,
never
so
dry, and they face the south window.
All right, let's just go back to the beginning. You said you sprayed. What did you spray with?
Malathion, because I still have it from a long time ago, and my Ficus benjamina every so often used to get the white stuff. And for years, I haven't had to do anything other than this year.
Okay. So I didn't hear you say malathion, just so you know, just in case the government is listening. It's been outlawed since about 2006. So it's about 20
probably
years. Obviously, it's been on your shelf prior to being on the store shelf. So it's pretty old. How effective is it now? it should be less effective just because of time, but it was always a pretty toxic chemical. So it's likely doing a job. Now you saw whitefly and you sprayed for whitefly. Then did the whitefly seem to disappear or did you continue to see whitefly?
They disappeared.
Okay. So why did you then pull out rubbing alcohol?
I found the odd one and the leaf still seemed shiny. And so I thought, okay, maybe something's coming. I checked everywhere. Oh, I know why I called it out. Even though all the plants kept producing fat, gorgeous bulbs, they would bend at the top and fall down.
Right. Okay.
They would never bloom. And I thought, maybe there's something I can't see. And I had remembered but a week after about the rubbing alcohol.
Okay. So likely what happened is whitefly can be killed theoretically with malathion, and you effectively did that to the adults. So they're just little tiny, look like a fruit fly, except they're pure white. So you knocked them down, but there were eggs on the back of the leaves. So the eggs hatched after the spray, and those were then causing some issues. The rubbing alcohol, again, theoretically should have wiped those out. For now, I wouldn't do any kind of toxic sprays. Rubbing alcohol is very toxic as well to plant tissue. So if you're worried about anything, I'd get out some soap and water. Take these plants into the shower with you. Give them a soap shower with you and a nice fresh rinse in the shower, not hot water, obviously. And then let them be. Let the water drain. Let them dry down. Don't worry about buds. For now, you want to keep the plants alive. Flowers will come. And the only way to keep the plants alive is to have them clean and clear of any kind of infestation. I would keep them isolated from other plants. If they are outside, that's fine. Don't bring them in. I can't remember. Did you say they are outside?
No, the hibiscus are all by themselves in the bedroom where they've always been.
Good.
But they keep producing bulb flowers. One of them flowers, even with the sticky leaves, they keep growing like mad, keep giving me buds, but they fall off.
But that's one of the reasons we love hibiscus. They are very good at producing flowers and they're big flowers. But if they're small, weak plants, the last thing you want is a whole bunch of flowers on those plants. So yes, as soon as a bud, just get out your little scissors and cut them off. Don't even dream about any flowers at this point. You need to get the plants healthy. And like I said, soap and water is your best start. A magnifying glass is probably your next step. Keep a real good eye on those plants. Thanks a bunch.
Thanks
for
so much, Mary. We're going to run to break. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
We are back here on The Garden Show. And Charlie, before we go on to our next couple of callers that we have on the line, we do have a couple of messages that have been left, and they all have to do with putting things on our plants that will keep certain things away, or in some cases, kill them. And I know our last caller, she mentioned, I guess it's a chemical that is no longer available. And you mentioned in the commercial that, of course, we are all guilty of sometimes forgetting that if we put stuff, especially outside, on things like that, just be careful not to get rid of everything, right?
Well, the problem with chemicals like malathion, and frankly, even soap and water, is that these are all-purpose insect killers, right? So meaning they're not specific. They're not targeted to, say, grubs or mosquitoes. They will kill any insect that they come in contact with. So, and that's what was happening. And I know this from years in the garden center business. General all-purpose chemicals like malathion, the other well-known one was diazinon, was that people would, I remember one time a guy said, I want to kill all the spiders that are on my property because my wife is really afraid of them. And frankly, that people still think that way. They want to kill all the spiders because they're afraid of them. And it's like, but spiders are one of the best, they're not even insects. They're one of the best little critters you can have on the property because they trap all kinds of mosquitoes and other insects.
Yes.
And they're not a bad thing. They might bother you, they scare you, but that's your problem, not their problem.
Yeah, like, they're part of our ecosystem. And they're
we need them. We need them. And like I was saying to you earlier, like it's only when I'm out watering and I'm really just being very slow, very zen with my plants, standing with a hose, you know, with tomatoes and things like that, I start to see all these little camouflaged praying mantids in amongst my tomatoes. Mm-hmm. They're the exact same color. And they're just out there praying. And they're just waiting for something to come along that they can eat. So, and they are very carnivorous. They eat lots of other insects. So we don't want to use all-purpose killers just because we can. We want to target specific insects for specific reasons if they're causing, you know, death and destruction in our gardens. It's, you know, you've got to really do your research before you just sort of randomly start spraying stuff, I guess is my point. So okay. Thank you for calling, Mary. It's always good to call and check if you're not sure.
Yeah, no, for sure. Okay, we have a first-time caller on the line, Pauline, who is calling from Bowmanville. Welcome to the Garden Show, Pauline.
Thank you.
Morning. And
I want to give you your garden wings. It's such a thrill for me. There you go.
Oh, I got garden wings, do I?
You do.
Okay, what's on your brain there? What do you got for Charlie there, Pauline?
Okay, well, I have a trumpet vine that is very invasive. I have vines popping up all over our front lawn.
Yeah. Yep. That's a, what we call
and
a vigorous
I'm
plant.
To find out, is there any way I can get rid of them?
Okay. Them? Just them. Well, remember there's the mother plant, the original plant. Did you plant that?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And where did you plant it?
It's in our front yard, so it faces the west.
Is it like going up a hydro pool?
The east, I should say.
What's it growing on? The house?
No, I have a trellis out there.
I see.
A tall trellis, and it's growing up there. What happened was I bought two trumpet vines. It's got to be about 8 to 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. I put them in both of them in the backyard against our shed with a trellis. Mm-hmm. Well, they would get green leaves, but never flowers. Right. And then after a few years, I might have got 3 or 4. So then they looked like they were dying. Each year I'd cut them back. And then they looked like they were dying. So I dug up the one and I thought, I'm going to put it at the side of this trellis. Mm-hmm. And I left the other one at the back of the side of the shed. Mm-hmm. And it would start growing, but just the leaves. Well, last year and this year, the vine has gone crazy. Even the one that I thought was dead in the backyard.
Right.
It's grown up to the roof. It's got all kinds of flowers, and it's starting to pop up on the lawn in the back as well. It's even popping up in the next door neighbors.
Sure. Soon they'll be right across Bowmanville. Do not let them come to Prince Edward County.
Well, they will. I try not to. I think I have to dig the mother up.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. Because all those little suckers that you're seeing coming up in the lawn and coming up at the neighbors, those are all growing off the roots of the mother plant, the original plants.
That's
ultimately
what I thought.
The only thing you're ever going to be able to do is actually eliminate the plants. And that is going to be a process that after 8 or 10 years, you're going to have quite a lot of root action.
Right.
Yeah. So it is a bit of a challenge. Well, if you really want to get rid of them. Yeah. I mean, cut them right down to ground level. That's going to be just right there is a, you know, probably 2 days work. Cut everything right down to ground level. As they start to pop up, as you start to see little green, and this will be more of a job for next spring, you will be able to annihilate the plants using simple horticultural vinegar when the leaves are young and fresh in the spring. But you can't leave all that vine up for next spring. So at some point, you got to bring the whole thing down to ground level. And then every day you're going to go out there and you're going to either spray carefully or paint vinegar onto every little leaf as it emerges. And eventually the plant will die. All those plants will die, but it'll take some time.
So you're saying I can't dig it all up.
Oh, you could try, but you may need a backhoe.
Oh, wow. That bad, eh?
Yeah, well, you know, yes, actually. They're very, very vigorous. Wherever you see them coming up, there's roots attached. Like they're coming right off of roots, those suckers. So you got a sense of how much root action there is. So, yes, I mean, you could start the, you know, it's a lot of physical labor, but for sure, digging is always the first idea because it can be very effective. So, yes, good luck with that. Either way, and I hope people who are listening aren't out buying trumpet vines right now. They're probably on sale.
Yeah, they're probably. Okay. Thanks very much for the call, Pauline.
Thanks. Good luck, Pauline.
Good luck with that. We have another first-time caller on the line. Yeah, we have Joe. She's a first-time caller from Paisley. Welcome to the Garden Show, Joe.
Hi there. I just thought you were breaking up there a bit. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah, we can hear you okay. We're going to give you I'm going to give you your garden wings, okay? Oh, there you go,
thank
Joe.
That feels real good.
Okay, what do you got? What's your question?
I look forward to Saturday mornings when I can hear Charlie and Dean with your cheery banter. Anyway, the first thing is a bird report about hummingbirds. Charlie, you were mentioning about the males usually leave first, then the females, and then the babies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
As of yesterday, I still had the male.
Mm-hmm, me too.
I've seen him today. It's getting cooler. I still have two females buzzing about. So that's that report. So next is morning glories. I bought half-price morning glory seedlings early July. I transplanted them into larger pots, climbing up the trellis and beyond. They're now like 8 to 10 feet tall. They're facing east and south, but no blooms, at least not yet. So a full 2 months, almost September. My question is, if I want to have blooming morning glories next July, next year, when would I have to plant seeds indoors?
Because that's a good question, actually, Joe. Because the seeds germinate pretty quickly, and once they germinate, as you know, the vines grow very quickly. Normally, we don't make a big deal about starting them indoors. You could. You're in Paisley, so you could, but 4 weeks before the anticipated last frost, whenever that would be, so late April perhaps, start them indoors. But usually when we don't get flowers on morning glories, there's two reasons. One is they're in lots of sun, right?
Yes, lots of sun.
Good, because that's what they need, full sun. The other thing they need is a certain amount of abuse. You have to stop loving them so much.
I mean, no too much water?
Yeah, too much water, too much fertilizer, too much good soil, and you'll get lots of green leaves and not a lot of flowers. So the trick is, it's like nasturtiums, right? If you just like turn a blind eye, let them do their thing, they're in lots of sun, let them, you know, get beaten down by that hot sun, they'll bloom like crazy.
Okay, so stop watering so much, it sounds like.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks very much. Yeah, thanks, Joe, and don't be a stranger. Charlie, quickly, because you mentioned it earlier, we did get a caller in, Julie from St. Catharines, who asked if it's too late to spray for grubs. What's your take on that?
I would say no, it is not too late. We're because it was so dry, a lot of the grub. So remember what happens. Those Japanese beetles, all those June beetles that were flying around, banging into windows and screen doors, those are the ones that pupated. Well, sorry, they laid eggs. Those little eggs hatched. And that's what we're seeing. Well, that's what's happening now. Tiny, tiny grubs are eating our lawns right now. The roots under the ground, we can't see them, but we can see patches of dead stuff if we have grubs. The test, of course, is pull on the dead leaves. If there's no roots attached, we suspect grubs. So, no, we certainly have time for the next few weeks. For sure, we still have time. And there are, I mean, you can hire people that will supposedly get rid of your grubs for you. In the meantime, there's the nematodes, and then there's the chemical that Scotts makes called Grub Be Gone Max. So either one, as per directions on the package, very clear directions, follow them to a T. Follow those directions. You'll need moisture in your soil. You need moisture to apply, and you need moisture to get the chemical or the nematodes down to where the grubs are. So you do this before rain, or you have access to sprinklers, and it will work. It will kill. You're never going to get rid of 100% of the grubs, but if you can get rid of a good percentage, at least your lawn will survive, because a healthy lawn can withstand a few grubs. It just can't withstand billions, which is what sometimes happens. And then we won't even get into the raccoons and the starlings and the skunks who dig up our lawns to get the grubs next spring.
And the nematodes are a good example of a very targeted and a natural way to deal with something.
That's right. We call that a biocontrol. So that's a living control mechanism. And you're right, very targeted. The nematodes we apply are eggs. So when we apply them in moisture into the nice warm soil, the eggs will hatch. The nematodes, you won't see them. They're like a hair. I mean, nematodes are also known as wire worms because they are very, very thin worms, but, you know, literally like a, like the width of a fine hair. And it's those little wireworms that work their way through the channels in the soil between the soil particles and end up contacting with the grubs. And guess what they do? They latch onto those grubs and they proceed to chew through their little bodies and eat them from the inside out.
How romantic.
It's
like
lovely.
A horror film.
It's
lovely. And I don't have any grubs in my lawn, partly because my neighbor two doors down, Stan, he has the beetle traps. And so I know they're all going to his house.
You are so lucky.
I haven't told him. I haven't said, oh, you know, they're all going to your house now, right? So I just keep my mouth shut.
I bet you he knows. He must know. Yeah. Because when you have those traps out, you get, like, they overflow with the quantity of beetles that are attracted to the traps. I know my neighbor had one out and they were blown away by the quantity of beetles. And I was like, yeah, keep it out there.
Keep it out there in your lawn.
Proud of you. That's such a good idea.
If you have beetles, you should give them all as gifts to your neighbors 10 doors down. So here's a little housewarming gift for you.
Exactly.
You put this on your lawn. Exactly. Okay. the numbers are 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. Got Martha on the line from Waterloo. Welcome to the Garden Show, Martha.
Well, thank you. My question is about hibiscus, my perennials that are now in my flower beds, huge, huge, taller than me, beautiful. And beautiful. But I'm going to be possibly moving and giving them to my granddaughter to her home. When's the best time to transplant?
If you can wait and transplant in the spring,
yes,
that would be optimal.
Okay.
You don't want to transplant them now. They're in full flower. They're, you know, big, huge plants. So, I mean, if you did try and transplant them now, you'd have to cut them right down to do that.
No, and I understand. And actually, they're too beautiful to cut right now.
Yeah. And so if you can wait till the spring, the main thing is they're very slow to get growing in the spring. They're one of the last plants to emerge up out of the ground. So you need to put some stakes out this fall, very specifically where the plants are, even if it's like little stakes in a circle so you can see where the crown of the plants is. And you could be digging those out before when they're still dormant. They could, once the ground is thawed, get them out of the ground. Or you can wait till they start to grow, which would be more like June. But either way, that's the time, you know, early, mid, late spring. I wouldn't wait till midsummer because, again, it's just too much to move. Okay.
Okay. But I could do it early May if I wanted to.
Yeah, if you can find them. So mark them now.
I understand. Yes, yes. Okay, okay. And then the depth of the hole, is that important?
It is, because if you look at the plants once you dig them out, with any of our perennial plants that are not woody, okay, so anybody who's listening, they might not know what we're talking about, because we had a call earlier from Mary about hibiscus. So the thing about hibiscus, there's three kinds we grow. The one that Mary is growing is a tropical hibiscus, so doesn't go out for the winter, but it's a hedge in the tropics. It's a woody plant. What you're growing is a herbaceous hibiscus, and they have these massive flowers. Dean, I don't know if you've ever seen them. They're the size of your head.
They're beautiful.
And they come in many colors, usually whites and reds and pinks. They're very, very showy.
Yes.
And then the other kind of hibiscus is the Rose of Sharon. So that is a woody shrub also blooming right now in our gardens. So when you dig up any herbaceous perennial, whether it's hosta or daylily or hibiscus, the leaves and the roots come together at a point that's called the crown. So the crown of the plant is what should be at the surface of the soil in its next location. Of course, you also know full sun, good quality soil, well-drained. So your granddaughter will need to have a location that she can give the right light and soil conditions. And otherwise, it's basically planting at the depth they're at now.
Okay. Great. And thank you.
Thanks so much, Martha.
Yeah, thanks very much, Martha. We do have to run to break. We will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, we are back here on The Garden Show. I want to just comment about that, you know, the last caller. It's such a nice, I think it's a lovely gift. We had a neighbor that moved away about 6 or 7 years ago. They were very dear to us. Mm-hmm. And we have a couple of plants from her garden in our garden that she gave to us before they left. Mm-hmm. And it's just really, really nice to get a flower from a grandparent or a dear friend or, you know, whatever. I just think it's a lovely, lovely thing to pass on to somebody.
Well, so often gardeners will have stories behind their plants. Mm-hmm. So anybody tootling around your garden with you, you're going to say, oh, and this is the one I got, you know, and this is the one I brought when I moved from Hamilton, and this is this.
Yeah,
and,
we love it.
Yeah, stories. Gardeners have great stories.
Gardeners do have great stories. We have great callers, too. We have another one on the line. We have Don, who's calling from Union. Welcome to The Garden Show, Don.
Good morning, Charlie and friend. I have two cedar hedges. Mm-hmm. Our property is 265 feet long, and along the south side and the north side, they planted white cedars, and probably 50 of them, and the north side they planted black cedar, the same amount. Now, these have been in the ground for, I'm saying, around 20 years, and they have grown to the point where they're probably 30 feet high at least. Mm-hmm. They're encroaching on our property. Our driveway on the north side is fast becoming part of this, of the...
Well, yeah, the hedge is out of control.
It's grown out of control, and they're getting wide at the bottom.
Sure.
It's about.
We should just add some trumpet vine to that, and we'll be all set.
I'm surprised McMillan Bladell hasn't showed up with a logging crew, because think there's money in that timber when the cedars are that big.
Wow.
Yes, that is an issue when plants like cedars, and of course, white cedar, black cedar, both native, both perfectly happy plants to grow with very little care, provide tons of shelter for wildlife, whether it's birds or bees or, you know, anything in between. You've got just probably tons of activity in that hedge, but to start trimming it now is challenging. So, yeah, you mean you're not going to put it back to being a hedge. If you want, if, you know, 30 years ago, it needed continuous annual trimming care, both for at the top and the sides, in order to keep it a hedge. Now it is just a bunch of big, tall, old cedars. You have two options. One is to remove them entirely, which I wouldn't recommend, because again, think of that habitat you'd be removing. But if they are impinging on things like driveways, maybe it's just a case of I would probably want to bring in more than just Joe with a chainsaw, but actually bring in a certified arborist to give me some suggestions on whether we remove entire trees or we just limb them up. So removing some of those lower limbs, allowing air and sun to come back down to ground. You're not going to bring in a cherry picker and start doing a whole bunch of trimming up high, but you could open up the bottom. You can make it more like a forest where you could walk beneath those cedars, and they would be you would be in the understory of those big tall cedars, because they probably have pretty good sized trunks on them by now too. So it's more just
there now.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a big property. Obviously, you've got the space for them. It's just a question of getting them to work for you.
Right. So you, how far up should I trim them on the bottom?
If you were trimming up, I would be trimming up so that it makes sense. So you can walk beneath, you can drive beneath, right. You can, you know, you can garden beneath to some extent, right? But the trimming has to be done properly so that, you know, we need to understand where those branches come off. And of course, you need good sharp tools to do this. And probably some of those branches are pretty big as well, whether it's chainsaw material or just a lot of sawing. You're trimming at the branch collar and you are removing and clearing and allowing. I mean, before you know it, you'll have little deer frolicking under those cedar that you'll see rather than having them in the brush that's below. So, I mean, I think you can make it quite a beautiful park-like situation without taking them down, but also making it possible for you to get through the property and enjoy the property.
I don't want to take them down.
No, exactly. Trimming up, I think, is probably going to be your best, but get some help. It's going to be quite a bit of work. That's a lot of cedars. Thanks, okay. Don. So
good luck on that, Don. I was just looking. Union is located just north of Port Stanley, south of St. Thomas. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, do those types of cedars grow? Do they thrive pretty much anywhere in Ontario? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, southern Ontario, meaning sort of south of you know, North Bay would be sort of southern Ontario. Mm-hmm. So they do very well. As you get further north, and it's more the black cedars, I think, would be a little more hardy than the white. But no, they're, and of course, where Don is located, that's like snow belt, right?
Yes.
So he probably, that's one of the things that's kept those trees so happy. But I'm sure he didn't even say it, but I can just envision he's probably got full generations of so many kinds of birds that have been raised in those cedars over the last, you know, 25, 30 years. Yeah. It's probably a very, very beautiful sounding space.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm going to give the numbers out. We have a little bit more time. We have one caller on the line. We have to go to break. We'll be back. Give us a call, 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Indeed, the last segment of the last show of August of The Garden Show. Yeah, getting into September on Monday. Of course, the C&E that you mentioned is coming to a close. Monday is the last day. Kids go back to school on the 2nd.
I love this time of year just because it's so dramatic. We go from, summer, no fixed schedule to, all right, kids, get out of bed. Let's go. Brush your teeth. Let's go.
It is. It's big
drill sergeant. Yeah.
So, and just a reminder to be careful out on the roads. Just, you know, lots of kids excited. Children. Last couple of days of summer, lots of people going to school. So got to be extra careful out there. We have another first time caller on the line. Agnes calling from Thornhill. Welcome to The Garden Show, Agnes.
Good morning.
Morning. I'm going to give you your well-earned gardening. Yeah,
I think you have a tip for us and some of the callers.
I do, because I love trumpet vines, so I had planted them along the back of my home, and the back of my home faced north, but I had massive trumpet vines. So they became invasive in my garden, in my grass, actually. So what I read somewhere, I don't remember where, to use, now I don't know, legal or not, but you can get it at Canadian Tire, muriatic acid.
Oh, okay.
So what you do is, I had my garden, my grass full of little containers, plastic containers, where I just put the head, the flower part, like the twig,
the tips,
part, if you want to call it. Yeah. Yes, exactly. In there for a few days so that it would pull the muriatic acid to the roots, and it killed it like that.
And did it kill the entire plant?
Yes, but I had many. Yes, it did. And I had many, many. I cut it down first where it was coming from. But I had many, many little containers. I saved all my margarine containers. All my little margarine containers that I had. And I couldn't cut the grass. But it
must have looked crazy. And did you find, here's a quick question just before, but thank you. Interesting. And I certainly hope we've got Pauline still listening from Bowmanville. Did you notice after the trumpet vine died, which I'm sure took a year or more, were you able to replant with no sign of toxicity in the soil?
I was.
Good.
I was. Yes. So now my question that I've been trying to call for a few weeks is this. I have a Dawn Redwood, maybe taller than my house, because it's all been over 30 years that I've had this Dawn Redwood. I noticed on the north part, there are two big, thick branches that have like, you know, it has all that nice feathery.
Bark
and the leaves are like feathery that they fall off in the wintertime. At one part, the part that faces north, I have two big branches that are like, there's really not much on them. It looks like it tried to grow, but it stunted the growth. So my question to you is, I hope my everything else is okay, but I don't know if I should hire somebody to come and lop those two off. I don't know. Like, I'm afraid. I don't want it to be ruined because it's very beautiful.
Sure. Oh, gosh. I planted a Dawn Redwood on my property because they are incredibly beautiful plants. So, okay, if those branches you're referring to on the north side with very little growth have zero growth, like they're actually truly naked, then yes, I would consider removing them. If there's any growth on them at all, I would let them be. Like, I mean, unless they're really unsightly or they're somehow interfering with other growth, I would let them be. Yes, you can always consider, remember, certified arborists, they don't come on, you know, the minute you call them, but they will make an appointment. They will come to your house and they will make recommendations and they will tell you what they will charge if you hire them to follow through on those recommendations. So that's what they do. That's how they help us. But they must come to your property in order to do that. And not all arborists do the same work. And of course, very much use I as in icicle, S as in Sam, A as in Alan, ISA, the International Society of Arboriculture is where we find our certified arborists. So if you're thinking that you do want to get somebody, bring somebody through that organization onto your property. Thanks very much
for the call there, Agnes. We're going to jump to our very last caller. We have Gail on the line calling from Fenland Falls. Welcome to the Garden Show, Gail.
Good morning. I would like to know how to get rid of goat weed.
Sorry. It's a hard one. That's kind of like the trumpet vine. It's a dig deep, remove, do not keep on the property anything you dig out. It goes into green garbage bags, out to the landfill. You don't even put it into yard waste. And deep as in dig to 18 inches. Sometimes people will use things like horticultural vinegar if it's gout weed or agapodium that's growing alone, because then if you spray it, it will work on the gout weed, but it will kill whatever else is growing nearby. If it's grown into a perennial garden and it's coming up in amongst other perennials, you're going to have to dig them out. You're going to have to peel out all the gout weed, and you're going to have to go and then transplant back after you've peeled out all the bits and pieces of gout weed. So yeah, it's a big job, but it can be a real big problem. And, you know, again, probably on sale at the garden centers as we speak. Don't buy gout weed and don't buy trumpet vines is the moral of the story for today.
For today, you got it. And trim your cedars when they're young.
I'm sorry I asked.
No, it's a good question. Great
thanks,
question.
Thanks, Gail.
And please call again, Gail.
Much.
Yeah,
have
thank
a
you.
Lovely
but
day.
You as well. Thank and we're you. Almost at a runway now. We and so are. You are going somewhere really special this week.
I am. And I just want to remind people that, you know, we're getting into fall. We're getting into some fall lists of things to do. Remember, get those spring bulbs in the ground this fall so you can enjoy them next spring. And I just want to remind you, website flowerbulbsareus.com. Just like Toys Are Us, but this is flowerbulbsareus.com. If you go there, the person, Caroline, who runs it, is giving 10% off to any of the listeners who would like to purchase through that website, special 10% off with the use of my name, Charlie, Charlie, as your top secret code. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, just a reminder, because the sooner you get them ordered, the sooner you have them in your hands and looking for nice weather to get them in the ground.
Okay. And where are you headed this week?
All right. So I've got this sweet little postcard was sent to us through Canada Post a number of months ago, Prince Edward Point. I would have called it Long Point because Long Point Road goes out to the tip of Prince Edward Point. It is a national wildlife area. It is a jumping off point here in Prince Edward County for monarch butterflies, and many of the migratory birds leave from Prince Edward Point. So we're off on Monday. Elliot's sister's coming to visit. So we're going to take her on a little trip there, a picnic with some birding friends. We're going to take our binoculars and a picnic and enjoy. There's bird banding going on. So they have big nets where they slow the birds down and band them, let them go. And we're going to just have a wonderful day. The weather looks beautiful on Monday to kind of see what's going on and see what it looks like, this taking off point heading south.
Well, you take some pictures. Want to see them. Thank you so much for today.
Thank you very much, so much for you, Dean, as well. Thanks, Owen. See you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.